Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
The evidence in these cases are egregious. The evidence in these cases are among the worst that I have seen.
It has been a day of tension and praise on Capitol Hill for historic Supreme Court nominee Ketanji Brown Jackson, the jurist who could be the first African-American woman to sit on the high court, gave as good as she got today before the Senate Judiciary Committee. Tonight, we're examining all of the issues surrounding the nomination of Judge Brown Jackson. My guests are retired federal judge Alexander Williams and April Fraser Kamara, president and CEO of the National Legal Aid and Defender Association, and also you, our listeners. I'm sure you have a lot to add tonight regarding today's event still going on at this hour. You can give us a call with your comments or your questions at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Judge Williams, Ms. Kamara, thank you both for joining the conversation.
Thank you, Mr. Fisher. It's a pleasure to be here this evening.
Thank you so much. Ms. Fraser, Ms. Kamara, can you hear me?
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for both of you coming on the program. Judge, let me start with you. You've been through the federal process as it relates to all of the scrutiny to sit on a high bench. What are your first impressions about today's events?
Well, first of all, again, thank you for having me.
Sure.
I've been so impressed with Judge Jackson's composure. And again, she's calm, she's unmoved by some of the, I call it nonsense and showboating that's been taking place all day. But she has just been a wonderful person, has responded well, and despite just focusing on the historical moment of having a powerful Black woman to finally get a voice and a perspective on the Supreme Court. But in addition to all of that, he is just incredibly qualified with an impressive background, a brilliant legal mind, and a terrific record. So I'm just, my initial reaction is that I'm just so proud of her, how she is handling the questions and staying calm and deliberate.
Ms. Kamara, this was not unexpected, particularly in a partisan event like this. Do you believe that any of the Republicans landed any blows today? And what was the thing that struck you the most?
Actually, no. I don't think any valid points were solidified through the questioning. Judge Jackson did an excellent job describing the importance of being a public defender, and I was glowing with pride as a former public defender, how she explained the Constitution and why it was so important, the role that she played as an attorney and a public defender, how fundamental it is to our constitutional rights. So actually, similar to what was said earlier, I mean, I was beyond proud of her reaction of really educating the Senate about the Constitution and the rights of every person who is charged with a crime.
Let's talk a little bit more about this, because she gave what some would say is a classic civics lesson in what the Constitution says about being a federal public defender, particularly as it relates to a Guantanamo Bay.
Absolutely. I think she did a tremendous job of educating the public about what it means to uphold clients' fundamental constitutional rights and the important role that public defenders play in a legal system that is designed to make sure that everybody's rights are upheld before you take away liberty And so she did a tremendous job of explaining due process. And she also did a great job separating out policy issues from judicial constitutional rights.
Well, I want you to react to this and what she said specifically about Guantanamo Bay, because, you know, I would argue that for a great deal of Americans, when you talk about those who were sent there after 9/11, this was an argument about fact versus emotion.
That's what makes our system the best in the world. That's what makes us exemplary. Federal public defenders don't get to pick their clients. You are standing up for the constitutional value of representation.
Talk to me about that, Ms. Kamara, and the fact that, of course, the Constitution definitely guarantees that those who have been charged with crimes, small or large, are allowed to have a public defender.
Absolutely. Our criminal legal system, it requires that every person, no matter what the accusation against you is, that you have access to not just a attorney, but effective representation as a part of your defense. And public defenders uphold our Constitution every single day. And what they do, their role in the system is deeply patriotic. Mm-hmm. And so I think she really did an excellent job really framing and helping people understand, regardless of what a person is charged with, they have a constitutional right to zealous representation. And it is a fundamental part of our legal system.
Please go ahead, Judge Williams.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And what they're trying to do is portray her as somebody who is particularly soft on crime and that she's some liberal, radical person. But again, a public defender serves a critical role in our criminal justice system. This is a system of an adversary nature where we have a prosecutor bringing charges and you have a zealous, advocate that ensures that the person who has been charged has the protection of their constitutional rights. And that's the very purpose of a public defender. So I'm very proud of how she articulated that, and I think it's almost shameful how they're trying to portray her as some, radical Marxist person that's soft on crime.
202-319-7810. We are talking about the confirmation hearings of Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson. If you have any thoughts, if you have any questions, give us a call. Let's go to Walter calling from, where is Walter coming from? From Northeast D.C. Walter, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good evening, everybody. Can you hear me?
You go right ahead.
Yes.
Okay, I got a question. Where's Tim Scott? He's supposed to be the black face of the Republican Party, but I don't see him.
That's a good question. Let me look, because I don't know if he is on the Judiciary Committee. You may have caught me flat-footed here, but I think to that point, this is certainly partisan in nature, and I think that is an interesting point that we have not yet to hear from Mr. Scott, and so I'll have to take a look and see if he is on the committee.
Okay, because here's the thing, because this is like a mirror image, where you had Clarence Thomas talking about high-tech lynching, but yet he's married to a white woman.
Okay, let me stop you real quick. So Tim Scott is not on the Judiciary Committee. It may be that we may hear from him between the time that the committee finishes its business and the vote, but he is not on the committee, so you will not expect to hear from him during the next day or so.
Okay, so now, going back to Clarence Thomas, his wife, Virginia. Yeah, Virginia is for racists and haters, because Glenn Youngkin and Winston Sears, they won by this critical race theory, and yet today I only see all whites and not so bright. And to me, If you're going to attack Judge Jackson because of her, the color of her skin, then the Republican Party, like Michael Steele said, the Republican Party has a problem, racism problem, because I don't see if it's all white and not so bright. And yet Michael Steele was the only, the first black GOP who was in charge of the GOP. And yet he's found out that racism does exist. But I'm like this, you'll have Michael Steele there, or you'll have Tim Scott, then they got a problem. That's all I got to say. Goodbye.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Thank you so much. So let's talk about the issue of race, Judge Williams. Obviously, this isn't, it cannot, I think, be avoided. And one of the people who brought this issue up in a context that the judge pointed out had nothing to do with her appointment was Ted Cruz. And this is what he said to her in reference to her position on the board of Georgetown Day School.
Are you comfortable with these ideas being taught to children as young as 4 and in respect to the first book, as young as 8 and 9 in respect to the second book?
Senator, I have not reviewed any of those books, any of those ideas. They don't come up in my work as a judge, which I'm respectfully here to address.
Judge Williams, let's talk about the elephant in the room, your perspective on where we are regarding race and these hearings.
Sure. First of all, let me say preliminarily that this whole business of a critical race theory has nothing to do at all with her confirmation and nomination. She said over and over again that she has never utilized critical race theory in her judicial role and so forth. So that was just a red herring, disingenuous statement being made by those persons. But clearly race is right in the center. And what is happening, these people bringing up critical race theory, all they're trying to do is to excite and incite a number of their supporters around the country getting ready for, I think, the midterm elections and also the 2024 elections. But she handled it quite well. Judge Jackson handled it quite well and basically said that she has not been involved in the curriculum there and so forth. But you're introducing a race and you're trying to, as I said, incite a lot of conservatives to suggest that she's trying to play the race card.
Ms. Kamara, how can you not talk about race during the course of these hearings, whether you are supportive of Judge Brown Jackson or not? The history-making point of her nomination cannot be avoided. Is there, in your opinion, a way that any of the senators on the committee can intelligently inject the question of race in any way, shape, or form and make it appropriate for why she's there?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The issue of race should be discussed during a confirmation process, but we should put it within the context of why race matters within the legal system. Specifically, the issue of racial, ethnic, and gender diversity is very important to our courts. We should talk about race. We should talk about the fact that 72% of Article III court judges are white, and only 12% are black. And when you go into other ethnic groups, the numbers are even lower. We should talk about why it's so important when a person walks into a courtroom in America that the judiciary should reflect the diversity of the communities that we live in. We should also talk about how race disproportionately impacts communities of color, specifically in the criminal legal system. And so it matters for people who have lived experiences with those systems to be members of the judiciary, because it matters whether or not people feel like justice and fairness is actually the end result. So I think race is always a relevant topic. However, it can be very harmful when race is used as a tool of division as opposed to a tool to advance our common goals around justice and fairness, which is what the judiciary should stand for.
And quite possibly.
And in addition to that, and I'll just add that the fact that this is the first African-American woman ever in the history of this country to be given an opportunity to have a voice for black women. I mean, that in and of itself is very important. And it's such a historic moment because you now will be able to see black girls and black young women now have a goal and they can dream and they can think one day even a black youngster or a black girl could have the highest legal job in this country. So race is here. We can't get away from it. And as indicated, when you look at particularly the criminal justice system and structural racism, we see that the disparities are evident all over. And so just to have this wonderful candidate, this nominee appear before us who happens to be a black woman, that in and of itself is news.
Indeed so. And you may not hear during these hearings the term magnificent blackness, but you will hear it on this program. I've been saying it since the nomination. And so there it is. When we come back, we're going to talk to Hunt, calling from Springfield, Virginia. We're also going to talk to Jay, calling from Germantown. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're taking your phone calls all the way up until 8 o'clock. We're going to take a break. But don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com. It's posted after 8:30 every night. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. We'll be back in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we are examining all of the issues surrounding the Supreme Court nomination of Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson. My guests are retired federal judge Alexander Williams and April Frazier Kamara, president and CEO of the National Legal Aid and Defender Association. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Hunt, calling from Springfield, Virginia. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I guess, listen, I have a case. I had a case before Judge Jackson. I did not receive justice. No fairness that she may have given to her clients when she was in the Public Defender Service. Actually, my case, I didn't receive due process. My case is still in district court just before another judge now. And my case sat in her chambers 2 years. I didn't receive the justice that you all are talking about that she is so magnificent for. And I'm not badgering her. I'm just saying from fact, I did not receive it.
Well, I would say it would be difficult for us to examine something that you were speaking about on this program, but I do appreciate your opinion. Can you talk a little bit to us, Judge Williams, about the issue that our justice system is imperfect?
Yeah, it's very, very difficult. I had, during my career as a judge, I handled over 6,000 cases. And you try to do the best you can, and sometimes you may have not have given the right decision. Sometimes cases are appealed or whatever, but you do your best, and there's always going to be someone that's going to be unhappy who leaves the courtroom. As a judge, I'm sure Judge Jackson has tried to make sure that she was fair and she was balanced and she listened and she tried to get the decisions off as expeditiously as possible. But sometimes someone is just not happy with the outcome, and you regret that, but that's simply the way it is. Everyone can't win. And I always enjoyed litigants who came before me who would always say, Judge, I disagree with your decision. I lost, but I appreciate that you listened and you studied and you made a decision and you treated me right. That's all you could try to do, but sometimes you don't get it right all the time.
Hunt, thank you so much for your comment. Let me go to Jay calling from Germantown. Jay, what's on your mind?
Yeah, thank you. Good afternoon. Good evening.
Yes.
I'm happy to have this opportunity tonight. Where we are watching on TV is a shame. It's not, doesn't represent our community. Is it time for us to get back together? A black from Africa, anywhere, we have to get back together because we don't have a black senator in that Congress or a senator anymore. Now, because she make a history, I'm from Africa. She make a history for me. I'm proud because she represents my mom. She's in Africa. She represents my mom. She represents all my girls. Today, I just want to ask all black Americans from anywhere, we have to get back together. We need to speak one language. And we need to think about General Colin. When he become Democrat black president, Colin is a Republican. He support Obama. When he become Kamala for vice president, he's a Republican. He support Kamala. Is that example we have to take back to our community. And we have to beg all those news, all those journalists need to,
okay, Jay, I do want to say, I appreciate your passion about us staying together, but what we are talking about is specifically what's happening in the hearing. So thank you so much. To your, I think to your point, however, as it relates to the, you know, the lack of black faces on this committee and in the Senate as a whole, there are only three. And, you know, we have, of course, Raphael Warnock from Georgia. We have Cory Booker from New Jersey. Of course, we did have Kamala Harris until she became vice president. And so, yes, she could very well, depending on how the vote goes, she could cast the deciding vote as vice president. However, and of course, Tim Scott. So, you know, certainly the number of people of color in the U.S. Senate is an issue. And I respect your passion about that, but I do want to stay, you know, particularly on topic. And Ms. Kamara, I will ask you, do you believe, and this is not happening in a vacuum, because we've had two very various contentious nominee hearings prior to this one. Do you believe that, as objectively as you could possibly answer this, that that the judge is getting the respect that she is due, that Judge Brown Jackson is getting the respect that she is due?
Thank you, Harold. I think that's a really important point. When we look at the qualifications of Judge Jackson, not only does she bring to bear the traditional academic and all of the professional metrics that you would expect for a prospective Supreme Court justice, so she is overqualified, I would even articulate, compared to other people who have been nominated to the Supreme Court. And as opposed to them respecting those qualifications, specifically her experience as a public defender, rather than receiving respect, we see that it's being vilified. And I think we, you know, it is very unfortunate in the Senate that we are not using her nomination to, as Judge Williams said, this is historic. Her experience as a black woman, combined with all of the credentials, not only make her qualified, but that voice is well overdue. The need for that perspective on the Supreme Court is so overdue in America. And so I'm, you know, of course, disappointed but not surprised that her experience and her credentials are not being celebrated, but rather she is being targeted in a way that I think is very harmful to people's understanding about the legal system and the various role that specifically public defenders play in trying to bring balance to the court.
And I certainly agree with Kamara there. She's right on target. Notice that they're not talking at all about her credentials. You know, here's a judge went to public schools, born in D.C., public schools in Miami, magna cum laude from Harvard University, cum laude from the law school, a clerk for three judges, was editor of the law journal, federal public defender, private practice 7 years, appointed by President Obama to the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia, then appointed to the Court of Appeals for the District. I mean, this woman has a stellar background, and I know of no one historically in this country that can compare with that record of what she's done. Nobody. Mm-hmm. But they're not talking about that. All they're doing is focusing on, I call it nonsense, trying to portray her as some radical, someone assault on crime. Ridiculous.
Well, let's talk about this issue, because one of the things that kept coming up today from Republican senators was the issue of her sentencing of convicted sex offenders, those who specifically were involved with child pornography. And this is one of the things that she talked about earlier today.
The way that Congress has directed the Sentencing Commission appears to be not consistent with how these crimes are committed, and therefore there's extreme disparity.
Judge Williams, what is she talking about when she references the Sentencing Committee for those who don't have their ear to the ground regarding this kind of legalese and legal information?
Sure, yeah. The federal courts and federal judges have been bound historically since 1988, I believe, 84 actually, to what they call federal sentencing guidelines, where once someone has been convicted of a crime, there's some guidelines that used to be mandatory, but now is advisory. And what the Republican questionnaires were talking about, they were suggesting that she deviated from the sentencing guidelines, and she seems to, in their opinion, be advocating letting child porno and child molesters off the hook. Well, that's just crazy. First of all, the U.S. Attorney's Office, they deviated from the mandatory sentencing on the sentencing guidelines by asking for a lesser amount, and then the judge listened to the public defender, took all of the factors in consideration, somebody's background, their record, their work experience, and then made a decision as to where the sentence should be. That's her right. She's supposed to do that. She's supposed to use her discretion to make a fair decision. And what Senator Cruz was doing, he's been very disingenuous. What he was doing is suggesting that in 10 cases that he had pulled out, she had deviated from what the prosecutors had requested by way of a sentence. Well, first of all, she's not out there to be rubber-stamping prosecutors. I never did it. Judges don't do it. Judges try to balance everything. So she had the absolute right to exercise her discretion and look at all the factors before making a decision as to what the sentence should be. Ted Cruz knew that. He's a lawyer. But again, what he was trying to do was to portray her as some type of person advocating letting child porno people go. That's all. Again, the whole thing is shameless. Mm-hmm. And we're not being fooled. Nobody's being fooled. And I don't think they're striking any brownie points at all. It's just showboat.
But, Ms. Kamara, is it quite possible that Senator Cruz and indeed Senator Lindsey Graham, who stormed stormed out of the committee earlier today and was doing more making speeches about Gitmo detainees than asking a lot of questions. But isn't it possible that, and this is about the politics, that they are playing to their audience and banking on the fact that their audience, their conservative audience, will not dig deeper, will not drill down, will not ask questions about their questions.
Absolutely. And it's really unfortunate. I think what Judge Williams was trying to explain is that, unfortunately, the senators are really taking advantage of the lack of knowledge that the average public has regarding the legal system.
This Obama talk is here.
Specifically, they have a really misunderstanding of the process, and so they really took advantage of the fact that the system, the average public does not know about that and how the system operates.
Mm-hmm. Judge Williams, have you met Judge Brown Jackson?
I know of her. I've never had the pleasure of meeting her, but she comes highly recommended, and her reputation is sterling.
Mm-hmm. Then talk to me based on your own experience. And yes, we've seen this show before, but your own experience as it relates to confirmation. How difficult is it to be cool under pressure?
Well, let me say this. Fortunately, I didn't have to go through what she's going through right now, and I wasn't on the Supreme Court. I was on the U.S. District Court.
Yes.
She didn't have this experience that she's going through now when she was being confirmed to a trial judge on the U.S. District Court. It's tough to watch it, but we're just so impressed with how calm and collective she is under these circumstances. Don't know what the vote's going to be. I'm hoping that there's a number of Republicans who would join with Democrats and give her a good number to confirm her, but we'll just have to wait and see.
Mm-hmm. We do know, at least based on the reporting, after South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham stormed out into the hallway, that he was overheard talking about red flags and that he can't support the nominee, although he has supported her in previous confirmation hearings. But this is certainly a different animal, a different judicial animal, a different political animal. And this is the biggest stage that anyone during the course of this process can be a part of, including the judge. But one of the things that was brought up today by Graham, and some could say, Ms. Kamara, that it has some legitimacy, is that Senator Graham asked her about her religion, her faith. She was reticent to talk about that. From your perspective, what was that about?
Unfortunately, it was really used. It really had nothing to do with Judge Jackson, but rather they were trying to use her confirmation hearing to make a point regarding what they described as attacks on conservative judges who are very vocal about their faith and the role that it plays. And it was very disappointing to me because it really was not relevant to Judge Jackson. There is nothing in her history that shows that she uses her personal faith to make any decisions regarding the court. And what she tried to articulate was the fact that her faith is private and the fact that it does not play a role in her judicial role of carrying out the laws of the land. And that's exactly how our Constitution is structured. We have a separation of state and church and state. And so, unfortunately, again, this is the example of using people's lack of knowledge about our constitutional rights and why it's so important that a person's personal beliefs do not come on the bench when they're interpreting the laws of the Constitution. And so, unfortunately, as opposed to, as Judge Williams said before, celebrating the fact that she's a person of faith like many African Americans are, but rather it was used as a tool to try to discredit her.
Well, Amy Coney Barrett, Justice Amy Coney Barrett, when she was a nominee, much hay was made about her Catholic faith, which is what Graham was suggesting. Is there a double standard when it comes to the Catholicism of Amy Coney Barrett and her nomination and being a Protestant as Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson said today during the hearings?
You know, I really cannot comment on that. Unfortunately, again, it kind of takes us down the road of how politics
exactly
is, you know, often brought into this process in a way that I don't think is helpful. But there should be respect for people to have various faiths and various perspectives. And there should be confidence in the fact that as we examine and the qualifications of those who are seeking judicial positions, that they have the ability to separate their faith from their role as an objective arbiter of the court.
Judge Williams, yeah. I did want to ask you, well, go ahead and make your comment, because I have a question for you as well about just the legal mind of Judge Brown Jackson or anyone who is sitting in this seat. But go ahead and make your comment.
Yeah, I was simply saying that a lot of these questions are simply bringing up, I call it dangerous issues or bifurcating issues that separate people and camps in this country. And when we start talking about the right of the First Amendment and religion and other kinds of similar issues, abortion, same-sex marriages, that sort of thing. They were hinting at those things to advance those issues and, again, entice anger in the minds of a lot of constituents. But anyway, I'll listen to your question. Yes.
Well, so the other thing that I was kind of thinking, because you know, my law degree comes from a cereal box, so that's where I am on this. but you know, one of the things that often fascinates me about this process and this one in particular, as we know, many of the members of the committee have law degrees themselves. Some of them are former prosecutors, and serving in other capacities. But I think the thing that just really fascinates me about this, that if you have been, you know, a senator for a term or two or 12 or however long, and you were sitting there questioning Judge Jackson, and you have not been in a courtroom, you have not practiced, you have probably not studied a law book in quite some time, that there is a great deal of risk in challenging someone who lives, breathes, eats, sleeps, this stuff. Because suffice it to say, no matter what you may think of any of the current justices that now sit on the court, and this particular nominee, these are some of the most brilliant legal minds in the country. And so you take a really big chance of looking like a fool if you ask the wrong kind of question, Judge Williams.
Sure. And I think Ms. Kamara has hit it what she said before, that a lot of them are just out here asking these questions that absolutely make no sense. Let me say that this is a brilliant judge. These people who have no legal background, they're no match for her. And her responses are so appropriate, said, I'm going to stay in my lane. These are policy questions. She's calm. She's collected. These senators who are getting their questions from their staff or young lawyers giving them questions, but they're in over their head. And as Ms. Kamara has said, they're taking advantage of the public who may not know a lot about the legal issues, and they're being fooled and tricked into thinking that these are real issues, but they're not issues.
Mm-hmm. I would ask you, Ms. Kamara, how's her poker face early on, particularly in the exchange with Senator Graham? I was concerned.
You know, Harold, let me just say this. As a black woman.
Yes,
and a black,
indeed. Go ahead. Come with it now.
As a black woman and as a black attorney who oftentimes had to be trained at Howard Law School to keep the poker face, I think she has done a phenomenal job of responding to some very ridiculous and outlandish questions. And so, you know, I just really commend her for keeping her composure. And as Judge Williams has said before, she literally has her excellence, like the black excellence that exudes from her as she speaks and educates the Senate, is just one that, you know, gives me such pride. And I think it is, you know, I force my two young daughters to sit before the television to watch her, because it is just really a embodiment of what black excellence means. Mm-hmm. And so I think she's doing a great job.
I think we may have even heard from one of your young daughters tonight.
Harold, I was hoping you didn't, but I think you did.
That's quite all right, you know. Better to hear mommy talking about, an historic event involving a hyper intelligent black woman, and than just cutting up on the phone. So it. we'll let you slide on that.
Okay.
Judge Williams, what advice, if you could, had an opportunity to give Judge Brown Jackson advice after today, but she still has more questions tomorrow, what advice would you give her?
Well, I would just tell her to continue doing what she's doing, not being lured into getting angry like some of the other nominees have gotten in the past. But keep your cool and listen to the questions. And when they try to trick you into getting involved in the issue that's policy or out of her lane, don't do it. And just stay calm, just the way she is. It's just a wonderful thing to watch it and to see it. I'm just so proud of her, and I'm just proud that I'm able to be here and alive to see this great moment in history. And I would just urge all of our listeners to keep watching it and keep looking at this awesome woman, and she is our hero.
Mm-hmm. I will say Senator Cory Booker from New Jersey just finished his questioning, although from what I've seen, he did little questioning, and certainly he was glowing in praise, just as he was on yesterday during the opening. And what we're seeing that's happening right now is that the first day of questioning, and of course the second day of the confirmation hearings for Ketanji Brown Jackson, just wrapping up. We are looking at probably about 11 hours today of questioning. This is a short recess. It is possible that they could come back for maybe one more hour, but then they'll be back again. This expected to wrap up tomorrow. Ms. Kamara, I'll ask you the same thing. As a former public defender, what advice would you have for Judge Brown Jackson?
As the first black woman nominated to serve on the Supreme Court, I just want to affirm to Judge Jackson that she was born for this.
Hmm.
She will call upon her lived experience to really fully inform this vision and idea in America around achieving equal justice for all. So I am honored to be able to witness it. And I just want to affirm that she specifically was created for this day. And so today we honor her as a former black public defender.
We don't talk much about gambling on this, but I'll ask you for the vote. Ms. Kamara, is this going to be 51, or do you think she could get more? What do you say?
I'm very hopeful that she will summon the courage in a few senators across the aisle to do the right thing and to join in this historic moment. So I'm hopeful that she will surpass the 51 vote.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Judge Williams? Higher than 51?
I agree with Kamara. I am hoping that there's some reasonable Republicans on the other side of the aisle who will vote for. I think Susan Collins may do it out of Maine. And quite candidly, Chuck Grassley wasn't too bad today. He led off the questioning. And I thought he was pretty calm and balanced. And I happen to like him because he was great in my confirmation hearing for me many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I'll say on this program, maybe I'm an optimist, but I think that even in this particular political climate, a lot of Republicans do not want to be on the wrong side of history. I suspect that I think that she will get more than 60 votes. You can hold me to that. We'll see what happens. Judge Alexander Williams, April Fraser Kamara, thank you both for joining this conversation. I really appreciate your passion and your intellect.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.
All right.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, March 22nd. I'm Harold Fisher.